this here.
I'm going fish, 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 fishing. I'm going fishing, hook, sinker, and line. I said fish, 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 fishing. Boy, I'm going fishing just to ease my mind.
Oh, there it is, there it is. That was the cue to start doing something. Even if it's wrong, we got to start doing something. Fishing Frank here, Robert in the chair across from me, and of course RJ in the gold and chrome towers of power there, looking down on us
with disdain of what are you going to say now. But being as how there's no delay, I can get it in right now. I can talk about it. One word of thanks to everybody. We've had a couple emails now, two or three, about people wanting to start gift certificate drives for Fish and Franks. And it's awesome. And everybody at the store, you know, it makes us feel wonderful. And we're so appreciative. You would think of something like that for us. But financially, we're pretty good right now. Everybody's working. The only people who are not working are the ones who don't want to. And they come back to work once this is over. But if trying to find somebody locally who actually is in need, there's a lot of people in dire need, and we're doing okay. We're fine. Almost brought a tear to our eyes. You know, we got a letter about, you know, wanting to do a drive to get gift certificates, to get money coming into the store. But truth of the matter is, I learned in Hurricane Charlie, I was shut down for 5 months. The store was destroyed. My house was gone. The belongings were gone. We had nothing left. It took us 5 months to get the store back open. We had jacked the roof up, repair everything, rip everything down. And with dozens of friends and me and Robert spending countless hours in there trying to get everything back together. But we worked our butts off. And 5 months later, we got the store back open. And we've had red tide events. We've had hurricanes. We're used to getting shut down. We're in Southwest Florida. And to be quite honest, when we do it, we have emergency funds set aside. We've got all this stuff there so that we can run without interruption. And it's just because we've been there. We learned this is what you have to do if you have a business in Florida. You have no idea what's going to come at you next.
No, you really don't.
There's no idea. I mean, you could be going long and you're making all the money you could ever want to make, and that really hasn't happened. But I would like it to happen. That could happen. You know, I would be really on the side of that happening. But let's say you're going along making all that, and then all of a sudden, a week later, everything changes. A weather forecast, aliens come, you know. So, you know, and I guess these people finally figured out that the Earth isn't going to end in 12 years and it's not our greatest danger.
No.
I mean, how many years have we been hearing this, that the world's over in 12 years? And, you know, and like I say, I'm very comfortable with the thought of, you know, sea level rise because, like you say, Obama bought a house on the ocean. He didn't buy one in the mountains. Now, if Obama had bought a house in the mountains, we'd be scared. You know, that would signal, all right, you know, things are going to get bad.
Yeah, he actually bought a house on an island, yeah, surrounded by water.
So I'm pretty sure we're okay.
I'm pretty sure, too.
Because, I mean, like him, hate him, you know, don't care one way or another, whatever you feel about Obama, he's not stupid. And if he figured the sea level is going to rise up, he ain't spending millions of dollars on a property. Yeah, so I'm good with that. A lot of weird things. I mean, the coronavirus thing is just, we're on shortened hours. if you want to get bait, we are what I would classify as a mental health facility at this point, because people need a little bit of bait, go out, go fishing, and a little separation. And just remember, we can keep this up as long as when you pull up to a place, if you see a lot of people, back out and go somewhere else. Every time there's more people. Now, if you can get in there and you can be a rod length apart from everybody, no problem. If you can't, it's up to you to go to the next spot. This is critical. Need to know information. You can go to any of the county parks and all that except beaches and fish from land, not from the dock. But you can fish from the land, which is actually really cool. I want to get into that a little bit more. Did we talk about that last week?
No.
Okay. I want to tell you what I would be doing right now.
Now, this is in Charlotte County.
In Charlotte County. We don't know what's going on in the rest of the counties. I'm pretty sure it's the same in DeSoto, though. But because DeSoto County is usually pretty awesome, you know.
Yeah, I mean, the biggest thing is that you still got to check your
local ordinance.
City and county, both parks, because they're all going to vary a little bit.
Well, everything in Punta Gorda City parks are different regulations than Charlotte County parks. But pretty much everywhere in Charlotte County, you can go to a seawall and fish. You go to the bank and fish. But just make sure you got to be a rod length apart. If you can put your rod out on either side of you and touch somebody, you're too close.
Shouldn't it be that way anyway? I mean, if you can swing your rod and whack the guy next to you in the head, don't you think you're a little too close? Spread out a little bit, boys and girls.
Yeah, I don't get it. I see people do that on the piers, and they bunch all up together. I'm like, that's the last thing I want to do. I go out in the water, and I pull out, and I look one way and see a bunch of boats. And I look the other way and I don't see any boats. That's the way I go. Because I'm not out there to catch every fish in the world. I catch a fish every once in a while, I'm good. I'm getting away from it. I don't have a radio on the boat. I have to carry my phone. And I turn the volume down, just check it every once in a while. But, you know, I don't get why you would want to be in a crowd when you're fishing.
No, it doesn't make any sense.
I remember as a kid growing up in Connecticut, the Mianis River, and opening day was always, I think it was like April 12th, April 14th, something like that. And you would never go on opening day because they were actually fishing shoulder to shoulder all along the banks on both sides. Of course, nobody catches anything, but, you know, it was opening day. You got to go out and stand in a giant crowd. I could never do that. It never made any sense to me. It's like, I'll wait a few days.
Yeah, I mean, we've got guys at the store. We don't have a problem getting people to work the weekends. That's the least problematic days we have because none of our guys want to fish on the weekend.
Right.
They want to fish, you know, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. But those are the 4 days it's hard to get people to show up to work for. Because, there's a lot less people. The fish have calmed down, you know. Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursdays are the big days our guys want to fish because Sunday you had a lot of people. Monday, everything it calms down. Tuesday, they go out. Now, you can't fish from the pier. And this is probably a good thing. What I'm going to tell you about is what I would do. And this is how you're going to catch a lot of fish. And it's going to change forever how you think about pier fishing. Now, I walk up to where the pier is. Now, I'm going to look and see to which side can I go to. And I'm going to go up, and let's just say for this example, the right side has a lot less bushes or shrubbery or whatever on it. So I'm going to go over there, and I'm going to rig up my bait, probably with either a knocker rig, what would be in Bass, Florida rig, and a live shrimp with probably, you could use a jig head. That would be the simple way to do this. A lead head jig, probably red or chartreuse. And I'm going to hook the shrimp through the head if I have a jig head on. Now, if I'm going to go underneath. I'm going to flip the shrimp over. You see where his little mouth is, a little round spot there. Go right in that, out the top of the head. Now I'm going to pitch that underneath the dock in where you have about 10, 12 inches of water. That's where the most likely place for the snook and redfish are going to start being. If you're only 6 inches tall, 10 inches of water is a lot.
No, that's true.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And I've caught literally thousands of fish out of 10, 12 inches of water. And so I'm going to cast underneath there, let it sit for a few minutes. I'm going to just kind of drag it back about 6 inches, stop, let it sit for another couple minutes. If I don't get anything, I'm going to pitch between the next set of pilings out there. Now, you're right. You can only cast out there, and you can only get between so many sets of pilings to cast under the dock.
Right.
But now you can have plan B, which is to go to the other side and cast in from the opposite side. And maybe you just weren't getting in the right angle for it. So you can do that from the opposite side of the pier as well. I usually start with the right side because I'm right-handed. It's easier for me to cast that way rather than backhand. If you're left-handed, it's going to be much easier to start on the left side casting with your left hand. But let's say you do that, you know, you're not really getting a hit. Nice day, want a little something cool to do. Put on a pair of tennis shoes, tighten them up, lace them up good, and now just walk slowly out next to the pier. Now, on Bayshore Pier, you could walk 3/4 of the way out along Bayshore Pier before it got to your waist. Before it gets to your waist. It goes out, it stays about 2 feet to 3 feet deep all the way out there. And finally, out by the very end, you got 6 feet of water, 7 feet of water. Yeah. People think it's really deep out there, but it's not.
I don't even know if it's 6 feet.
It might not be right around the pier. It's one of those piers you might be able to walk all the way around it casting.
Yeah. I mean, maybe with the tides we got going on the next couple days,
right,
might be 6 feet. But I've seen people do dumb stuff off that pier and seen them lucky they didn't break their neck.
Yeah, it's very, very shallow.
But it is good weightable sand there. That whole area there is really nice, firm, good wading area.
Yeah, the bottom's nice there. You're going to find a couple little mud holes or muck holes, but for the vast majority of that area along Bayshore, you can walk that very easily. But remember, do not lift your feet. Your toes are always in contact with the bottom. You slide your foot forward on the sand, you put your heel down. You're going to toe first this. You're not going to pick your foot up and then put your foot down because, let's say you're 160 pounds and you step on a 1-pound stingray, you're going to make him a little mad.
Yeah.
He's going to get a little mad. He's going to stab you. And rightfully so. You stepped in his back. Keep your toes on the ground. Slide your foot forward, set your heel down. Slide your foot forward, toe in the sand, set your heel down. It does you no good to slide your heel along. If you're sliding your heel and setting down your toe, you're going to get stabbed by a stingray.
Yes.
And stabbed is the correct word. Not poked, not whatever. Stabbed. That little sucker hurts. And it's basically made like a dagger. Sharp on both ends, very pointy on the end. And it's kind of serrated. And it's got a venom on it. So it's going to hurt. Toes down, keep your toes down, slide forward. Now, you can freeline a shrimp, and which is the way I prefer to do it. Now, what I'm doing is taking, let's say I got 12-pound braid, medium-heavy, 7-foot spinning rod, and I'm using probably 30-pound fluorocarbon leader, and I've got 2-3 feet of it on. And now I'm tying my hook on. If I've got a select-size shrimp, I've got about a 2-aught hook. And right at the very flipper part of the tail, I'm going to put that hook, and it's a regular octopus style, not a circle hook. You can do it a little different for a circle, and I'll explain. But for this, I'm using a regular J hook and octopus style. I've got my line tied to my leader, 2-3 feet of that, about a 2-aught hook on. And right at the flipper part of the tail, right before it gets to the meaty part, there's a good hard knuckle there. And it's one of the reasons you can peel the shell off and the tail kind of stays there. Make it like a little finger grip for, you know, shrimp cocktails and stuff. You put your hook in from the bottom of the shrimp out the top. And what's nice about this is all of the shrimp is weight forward. So when you go to cast this, you're going to do a low sidearm cast. Now, I want you to practice this a couple of times. Wherever you are, you can do it right now. You don't even need a fishing pole to do this. I want you to put your arm out to the side. I'm doing it so I can describe what to do. And swing your arm forward. Now, when you do that, look very closely. Where you started this, when you're swinging your arm forward, kind of like, what would it be, a tennis? When you hit sidearm with a tennis racket, right? Mm-hmm. All right, when you start back, and you go to bring your arm forward, did your hand end up higher than where you started? Did you actually arc up? That's the problem with 99% of the people when they sidearm, they don't keep the rod hand all straight. It goes forward in a straight line. You got to think skipping a stone, not hitting a tennis ball. If you skip a stone, you're throwing it down and forward, but you don't have any up to the movement. But when you're hitting a tennis ball, you always follow through coming up. And that's what happens to your cast. You might as well be throwing overhand as sidearm at that point. You get what I mean?
I do.
So I just don't know if I make sense all the
time. No, that's making perfect sense. I'm just trying to analyze it in my head at the same time because it's following how I'm seeing it in my head.
Okay, so what I'm doing is in order to get this shrimp under the dock, I'm hooking them through the tail. Now, you actually get a better hook set if you hook them through the head, in one side of the head and out the other, you know, right under the horn. But they tumble in the air. They don't fly straight. So it's very hard to get a straight cast. If you hook them through the head, once that shrimp's tumbling and spinning in the air, it's like a football player. He throws a spiral, which would be hooking it through up from the bottom out the top just in front of the knuckle joint on the tail so that all that weight forward of the head of the shrimp allows it to fly straight, allows you good accuracy, about 30% more distance on your cast. When you hook them through the head, that thing's tumbling in the air. It's going to go on top of the dock, in the piling, and every once in a while go where you want to go. But it's a much more difficult cast. The big difference is if you hook them through the head, you feel the bite. Set the hook right away. If you got them hooked in the tail, I always count to one or two before I set the hook because they're eating that shrimp head first 99% of the time. So it's a bite and then another bite. Now, if you got a small enough shrimp on, set the hook right away because the shrimp is small, they can suck it in. But if you're using a 4-inch shrimp, 3.5, 4-inch, that's probably two bites for the fish to get to where the hook is. So you got to give them that little first bump, 1,001, 1,002, set the hook. You're probably going to get them.
That makes sense. I mean, I'm in agreement with that. But casting them by his tail, what's the difference with the tail versus the head? Because of the skipping aspect of it or just because of the distance cast of it?
Well, when I hook them through the head, they're more likely to be to the right or to the left of where I was casting.
Mm-hmm.
Because once they start flying in the air, they're going end over end, butt over tea kettle.
Yeah. And start tumbling.
Yeah, they're tumbling, so they're not aerodynamic anymore. And veering off from where you cast is quite common.
Mm-hmm.
Hooking them through the tail, even though I'm not throwing that far, I still get a much straighter shot at it.
Right.
And I'm much more likely to put it right next to a piling, you know, or in the middle if that's where I'm throwing, but I can target better.
More accurate.
More accuracy.
Well, and that's another thing, too, because of, like, days like today. You know, it's pretty sporty out there, whether you're land-based fishing or out in the boat.
Oh, I talked to Josh Olive. I called him.
Okay.
And the boat's doing fine. He's out there, I think, on one of the deep holes out there, and they've caught one shark.
Nice.
He went out with Captain Mike and to catch sharks, and they hadn't caught any. So he asked me, you know, I said, well, why don't you take my boat out? And he said, well, I don't know where to go. And I showed him on the map. He's like, really? I said, yeah. what do you think you're talking to? So he's got one shark in there. I said, how's the boat? He said, slow. I said, but other than slow, I told you it was slow. I mean, I bought it for my mom and dad. I didn't buy it for, you know, young people to go flying around in. And Dad always wanted a goofy aluminum prop on there. that he had just wore down to nothing. When I switch the prop out to one of my props, mm-hmm. I'll get 4 or 5 miles an hour faster out of the boat with same RPM. Mm-hmm. I have blades that actually carry the boat forward, push right. water, you know. I have no idea. You ever notice, and I guess I'm getting it myself, how when you get older, this is what you want. It doesn't matter if it's correct or even right. This is the way you do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I work with you.
You work with me. You're getting used to it. Well, when this whole coronavirus stuff hit, we're sitting there, and we were all doing kind of good, and then we had a lot of people from out of town show up. And it scared the heck out of everybody.
You think?
And everybody was terrified. Because everybody who had been here in Southwest Florida, we were pretty much almost over it. It was pretty much not going to be an issue. And then everybody, and I mean just people from different counties were coming in, different states, all over. Everybody decided, all one weekend, everybody was going everywhere. It was coronacation. It wasn't corona lockdown.
Right.
And they were coming in from out of state, out of county, out of everywhere. And normally we love everybody, but in this particular instance, it scared everybody. And my guy said, we're not working anymore. So what we did was we negotiated down to one shift, both shifts. We have a first shift and a second shift. Everybody works one shift, so you're not dealing with as many people. We have a pass-through window on the front door, so if you don't want to come into the store, which I get, you just walk up out front, and somebody will come to the door there, take your bait order, or get you whatever you want. You don't have to enter the store. We have a very nice pass-through system worked. Or if you need to come into the store, it's a limit of 10 people, and there is a chain gate and all that back on the back, but you go around behind the store, come through the back parking lot. But we've all had to make adjustments to this. Now, they're asking, they say dogs can get this?
Dogs and cats.
Dogs tigers. And cats. Cats are the big thing, right?
Yeah, tigers get it, too. That one in the Bronx Zoo came down with it.
And fish. I don't think so, right?
I don't think so.
No, not yet.
This is a mammal problem.
This is a mammal problem, not a...
Yeah.
Interspecies. Well, it started with bats, so I didn't know.
Mammal. Yeah, I forget what they call it when it goes from one species to another or from an animal to a human.
Yeah, but you got it from animal to human.
Zootropic, I believe.
Zootropic. There you go. That's it.
Hey, but now can it go from human to fish?
I don't think so.
You don't think so? You don't think it's that close? Because it goes to cats. You can go from human to cat.
Mammals.
Human to dog.
Mammals. But
yeah, I was just wondering. I don't know. I don't have any idea. I'm not a doctor.
None of us know.
Okay. Well, you never know. You guys are pretty smart.
Yeah.
I know I don't have to be that smart. I follow one simple basic thing that makes me succeed. I don't need to be the smartest one in the room. I just have to know who is. Once you know who's the smartest person in the room, you're going to do okay.
There you go.
If you think you have to be the smartest person in the room every time, you're not going to do well.
No.
You're going to have a couple of successes and a lot of failures. Just learn who is the smartest person and accept the fact it may not be you.
Let's rewind for a second, because that side cast that you were talking about, casting right. sideways, even without a shrimp, that's one of those things that should be practiced regularly.
Almost nobody can do it.
Almost nobody can, but here's my reason why I think people should practice it, because there's a lot of very windy days like we're having right now. And being able to control that cast by keeping that line, lure, or bait more parallel to the water gets you a little bit more accuracy, a little bit more distance. The line doesn't want to catch in the air and drift you way off course. But also we get a lot of people that like to use like a bobber, for example, and they hold their rod tip up, or they're working a lure while holding their rod tip up, and the wind will still catch it and throw you off course or change your action of your lure. So learning how to cast sideways or also holding your rod tip down closer towards the water where your line isn't catching in the wind can make a huge difference with controlling.
A little better, but mostly you got to learn it to damn it fish.
Oh, yeah.
And damn it, fishing is a big thing. because it's either, damn, that's a good cast, or, damn, I'm in the trees. Yeah, one or two of the other ones. You know, it's either, damn, it's a good cast, or damn, I'm in the trees. But now, if you're not casting into the mangrove branches every once in a while, you're not getting close enough. You're not trying hard enough, and you're simply not going to catch the fish. It's a hook. You, oh, I'm stuck in the trees. You go get it.
Right.
This does not end the world. It does not, you know, aliens don't shoot you with an anal prober. You literally, there's no harm, no foul. Now, if I've got a lot of fish in that spot, there could be a problem. Because as soon as you throw it in the trees, you go to jerk it to get it out, well, that whole bush shook like a big animal coming to pounce on the shrimp or on the fish.
Right.
So you've got redfish, snook, and you're casting in there, catching all these fish, and you hook into the mangrove tree. You're better off just setting that rod over to the side and try cast around it. Because as soon as you go to rip it out of the mangroves, picture if a bobcat was coming down out of the trees onto the fish. It would probably make that same type of crashing going through there on its way down.
Absolutely.
So people wonder why, you know, the shaking of branches would spook the fish. Well, if you're a panther or a bobcat jumping down on a fish, and they actually do that. You don't think of it, but you've got a big bobcat, panther, and they're crawling out in the mangrove branches, and there's this big fish laying in the water, head right under the water. They bite the fish right while it's underwater and come up with it in their mouth, and off they go onto the shore to, you know, drag it up there and eat it. Cats regularly fish that way.
Absolutely.
I don't think people realize that.
But even an egret...
You got this look like, how did I get here? I don't know. If you ever saw an MRI of my brain...
All right, so you led me into a story.
Okay.
I got to open my beer first.
Ah, there you go.
Many years ago, when I was working for Outdoor Life as a stringer, they sent me to go fishing with a guy by the name of Bill Dance. And I was in panic. He was a famous tournament fisherman at the time.
Yeah, he's still very famous.
And still around, right? I was in panic for the 2 weeks that I had notice on this that my first cast was going to be a mess. You know, and I didn't know what to do, and I'm on the boat with him, and I'm taking my time tying my lure on. Bill makes his first cast up into the trees. And I'm not talking water level here. I'm talking up into the trees. And he just laughed. He says, you know, that happens every now and then.
Yeah.
So I calmed down after that and casted mine into the trees because I didn't want to show him up. But
no, I wouldn't have. I got no problem with that. But people do that when I go with them, too. I have a very hard time going out with people because I'm Fishing Frank. And when Fishing Frank gets on the boat, you know, miracles are supposed to happen. The water parts, the fish jump out.
Yeah, until Frank backs the boat up and sinks
it. Yeah, and sinks the boat or trashes it or whatever I'm going to do. But, you know, it's not good for the legend when I actually get on the water with people.
Right, right.
You know, occasionally it's pretty good, but there are times when the legend just doesn't really... The myth and the man don't exactly come together. But when you're out there, how many people out there, honestly, have you ever thought about just waiting along the side of a dock? Where are all the big fish going to be? Under the dock. That's the reason the trout and the mackerel and all that are out a cast away from the dock. Because if they come under the dock, there's usually something big trying to eat them. There's big snook, there's Goliath grouper, there's big redfish, black drum.
Everything. I mean, even larger fish of themselves, you know, like a small trout will get eaten by a big trout.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, there's just some of those fish that just do that. So it's, yes.
I think every fish does that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people ask me, well, this is a freshwater lure, is it going to work? I'm like, really? A saltwater fish, a freshwater fish. What does a fish want to do? Eat a fish that's smaller than it is.
Yeah.
You know, eat something else that's moving around. That's what fish do. They don't know if they're saltwater or freshwater, and pretty much I don't think they're species specific. If you get a bunch of snook together, one gets hungry, little guy in the group, you watch your butt. You're going to end up somebody's dinner.
Yeah. Well, and that's why when you see schooling fish, they're all around the same size.
Yeah.
Because if there was a couple of smaller ones in the group, they wouldn't be in the group for very long. They'd be in one of the fish in the group.
Yeah. So whenever you're thinking about this, walk alongside the piers and cast underneath the pier. There's so many cool places to fish. And this is freshwater or saltwater. Most of the biggest bass I've ever caught have been under somebody's dock or under a dock, a pier, or whatever, something with heavy overhead cover. Because birds can't attack them when they're under something. It eliminates, you know, bobcats can't drop down on them. That's one less place they can be attacked from. And the hardest place for them to see is above.
Right.
And so, it also gives them shade. Because this, the sun down here in Florida will cook a fish underwater if they stay out in the sun long enough.
Well, and they don't have eyeballs or eyelids either.
Eyelids, right, yeah. So
they have eyeballs, just not eyelids.
No eyelids, right.
Why is that important, boys and girls? Let's give it a thought. If you look up towards the sun, you can squint. Squinting is a big deal when it's bright and sunny out. But if you couldn't squint and you have no hand to put up over your eyes, right, you get little tiny fins, you know, like T-Rex type hands. If you were T-Rex, you couldn't get your hand up there, right? With fish, they get little fins. They won't go over their eyes. They got no eyelids. Shade is a critical deal. That's really good. Well said, RJ.
That made really good sense.
Because of the beer.
Yeah. That's it.
He'd be doing better if he had that Jameson mixed in with, I don't remember what you gave us that day.
Sexton.
That is good booze. One of the guys just brought me in some of that Pilar rum. It's the Ernest Hemingway family makes it.
Oh, no kidding.
And it's the light one. I haven't had that yet. So it's sitting up on the shelf. Get done tonight. We'll have a little toast at the end of the night. Made it through another one. We're going to try that. I've had the dark stuff. When I went to ICAST, that was what they plied me with. And, yeah, I drank, like, you know, one of those red Solo cups. Mm-hmm. I had about 1.5 of those of straight rum. And I was still walking around talking to everybody. I had no idea who I talked to or where I went, but I actually did it. And everybody going, oh, I didn't think you were drunk. I got pictures.
We got the police report.
No, there was no police report. I went and slept in the truck for a while. I wasn't driving with all that. I guess as far as what's going on right now, supermoon. And the last time we had one of these supermoons, I ended up sinking my boat. Remember that?
Yeah.
It was just a few months ago.
Yeah.
We had, you know, there's been several of these supermoons in the last year or two. I don't know. Why is that? Is that normal?
Not like this. Not with as many as we've had in the last 2 years.
Yeah,
I'm not used to that.
I think it's just math, though. Somebody was trying to explain this to me the other day. Astrophysics, the moon has cycles. It's not a pure...
Not a circle.
It's not a circle. It's not a pure oval either, and it speeds up and slows down depending on where it is and blah, blah, blah. So we're just in that cycle now where mathematically the moon is closer to us more often.
Well, what happens on these supermoons is the tides get pretty darn extreme. So if you have a little bit of wave action and a lot of water pull from the tide, when you're up by a beach or the land, the water sucks out much farther. So as the waves come in, they hit the sand, and then before the next wave, they pull back. Well, that pullback is exaggerated. And usually it's 5-6 feet. Now, from personal experience, I can tell you it will go back at least 30. Because I have a 24-foot boat.
That was a good way to measure it, Frankie.
Yeah, and it dropped my boat right under the sand, and then the wave comes in and fills the boat up with water.
Yep.
And I have a very low transom anyway. You know, my boat wasn't built for doing that, but I've done it 1,000 times, but I forgot supermoon. And you're going to get more current flow, more pull back away from the sand. There's a lot of things happen on these supermoons, outside of it looking, I can't tell a supermoon from a normal moon. It looks the same to me. I mean, what is it? A 32nd of an inch bigger?
What was it, this one? It was like 13% larger and like 20% brighter.
Yes.
Okay, so the moon normally appears 3 inches across in the sky. I would say.
Okay.
Right, 2-3 inches across when you look it up in the sky. And so it's 13% bigger. So if it's 3 inches, that's, you know, a third of an inch. Okay, yeah, I can't tell the difference.
But
it gets brighter, though, doesn't it?
It does, much brighter. Everything in the water at this point is being affected by it. When you got more currents and more flow, that's pulling the bait fish out of sheltered areas, and it's pulling the small fry out and the crabs and everything else. So there's far more bait active in the water when you get a moon like this.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all day that's going on. Those currents don't happen just at night. So the fishing now should be pretty good, and Robert can confirm or deny that.
No, I definitely agree with that. You know, the biggest drawback to it is usually when it's clear out and you've had that big full moon, the early morning bite is usually fairly lousy.
Because they've been eating all night.
Because they've been feeding all night long. But usually by 11 noon or so on, fishing gets considerably better, and as the day progresses, it gets even better. That's one of the biggest, even if you can't tell the brightness or the size of the moon, the actual physical effects that it has on all the aquatic wildlife in general is pretty astronomical. And it even signifies, like, some fish or saltwater animals in general to do a breed, you know, they'll go offshore. So like some of your shrimp will actually migrate offshore as that tide starts to go out in the late afternoon and early evening. Same way with crabs. Tarpon showed up in really good numbers. And there was a point there the other day, two days ago, I think it was. Let's see, today's Thursday, Monday night. Even though it wasn't technically the full moon yet, they actually did almost like a hill tide event. The crabs didn't flush super heavy, but there were some crabs flushing, and a bunch of tarpon showed up in the pass from 3 o'clock until about 6:30, and the tide was still really cranking for a couple more hours. But a lot of those fish ran offshore and then came back at like midnight when it started to really slow down and was thinking about turning. Uh-huh. And I guess at midnight it went nuts out there in the pass. There was about a dozen boats or 10 boats, something like that, out there fishing and had an incredible nighttime fishing.
Well, I've usually noticed it. The best spawn indicators are Seagram 7, and it's usually 2 a.m. But other than that, you know, I'll agree with everything you said.
Yeah.
And also I have to say, if you have not fished the shoreline at night with a full moon, you are missing out on a major fishing experience.
There's
plenty of light to see what you're doing. You don't need a headlamp or anything like that. You can see what's going on. The phosphorus in the water is incredible. And I'm telling you, catching fish at night in that low light condition is just amazing. Absolutely. So if you got the opportunity with any of the full moons, it's what, 2 or 3 days before to 2 or 3 days after that you got enough light from the moon.
And no flip-flops. You will hate life if you wear flip-flops out at night when you're trying to fish, freshwater or saltwater. In freshwater, there's red ants. There's everything trying to bite you or sting you or something. You're not going to die, but it's going to get really annoying. And in saltwater, you're going to step on something, barnacles, oysters, whatever. Wear a pair of shoes. Lace them up. Tie them in place. They don't have to be a lot, but at least a pair of tennis shoes. When you're going out at night, trying to do that, I can't tell you how many people we see come in with bandaged feet. Oh, it was hot. I just decided to wear my flip-flops out, and I stepped on a big rock with barnacles on it, or whatever. The list goes on and on. It's dark out. Put a pair of tennis shoes on so you don't have to be so careful. it makes the night more fun. The water's super clear. Is this going to make a difference on this bright full moon thing?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the water is pretty much as, you know, usually April is our driest month of the whole year. So the water gets super clear. But then we've also had a couple of cooler nights, which will help knock down some of your algae growth, which will make it even clearer.
Would a Ouija board help?
Nah, probably not.
Okay.
Tarot cards, maybe.
Ah, okay. That's my sister's store, down to earth.
Gotcha.
Yeah, okay.
But the clear water right now, I mean, fluorocarbon, I think, is going to be one of your better friends right now. You know, I'm not usually always a huge proponent to fluorocarbon versus regular mono because they both work pretty darn good and been catching fish for years on mono. But when you've got a lot of people are fishing in their boats right now, I mean, they've got nothing to do. There's a lot of people that are fortunate enough to have boats that are going out with friends or borrowing friends' boats and going out there. So there's a lot of pressure on the fish.
I mean, look at Josh. Yeah.
Right.
Exactly as you said. Can I borrow the pontoon boat? Sure.
Right. There's a lot of pressure on the fish out there right now. So having that little added edge can make a huge difference with whether you're going to get a bite or not. And I think the fluorocarbon in the clear water is going to make a big difference. At night, I don't know if it's going to make a huge difference or not, because at night, I mean, there's a lot less pressure on the fish out there. You know, I don't think it's going to make as much of a difference.
Now, you need to be out because this super moon's on right now, right?
Mm-hmm. So, I think night before last was the official full moon.
Okay, but does it even make sense to go out at first thing in the morning?
No.
Aren't these fish feeding all night with this bright moonlight, clear water?
Yeah, if you're going to go out at night.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to go out, you know, go out in the evening and fish into the night, rather. Because from, I would say, 6 to 10 o'clock, there's not going to be much of a bite.
Yeah.
Maybe even 6 to 12.
For most of your fish, yeah. For most of your fish from 6 until noon, I think, is going to be marginal at best. But personally, I mean, like, if I had my choice, it would be going out at, like, 5 or even 6 o'clock in the evening, waiting for that sea breeze to lay down, getting to the areas where I want to fish, having a good daytime visual of any obstacles, whether it's crab traps or anything like that, to make it to the area, and then start slowly fishing my way back towards home all the way into the nighttime and do it that way.
Actually, I think you just go out, find a decent spot to fish, drop the anchor, you know, break out some refreshments and throw the rods out the back of the boat, anchor off the bow, throw the rods out the back of the boat, and or anchor off the back and throw the rods out the front of the boat. And kick back, if you got room for a sleeping bag, you know, or, you know, whatever, just go to sleep. One really cool trick. I keep everything under wraps, and I put blankets or tarps out until after the dew point hits. Now, if you're going to go to sleep before the dew point, try and get some plastic over you. Otherwise, you wake up wet. The dew point, boom, the whole surface of the boat is wet.
Oh, yeah.
Usually, that happens pretty early in the evening.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're out fishing, and just nice, easy to do, cover things up with something plastic or a tarp. And that way, after the dew point's gone, you just shake that, you know, take that, shake off the water, fold it up. Everything's dry and nice. Nice way to spend the night. But take some sandwiches with you, a cooler, some beverages, anchor up for the night, have a good time. You know, if you're going to social distance, being anchored on a boat in the middle of the harbor is probably your best bet.
Yeah, it can be, without a doubt. And it is a little cooler at night, so it's not. It hasn't been quite as buggy, but we do got a front coming in, so tonight's supposed to actually be pretty warm and humid. So the next 2 days might be questionable whether you definitely want to bring your bug spray or not.
You got to watch the rain and wind thing for the next 2 days.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the only thing I will tell you is I don't anchor really in the lee side you can anchor on the lee side of an island, but you really want the wind blowing from you to land.
Yeah.
Because you don't want the no-see-ums coming up wind to get you.
No, no. No, that's not fun. That makes for a very long night out there on the water.
Oh, yeah. Actually, for me, it'd be a really short night. Time to go home, guys.
Yeah. I just pick up the anchor, fire it up, you know, do about 30 miles an hour for a little bit till I get further out away from land, and then I drop it again, you know, so that the wind has got more of a chance to blow them back to shore.
Right. Yeah, there's been too many nights out there. I've been out there, and those bugs get terrifying. So
let me make a comment about fishing pressure, because you've brought that up numerous times on the show, and, you know, fluorocarbon and all the other things. I read a great article a number of months ago about why fish react and how they react to pressure, which is real similar to the way we do it. If you're just about to fall asleep and you're in that place where you're almost asleep and suddenly there's a loud noise or an odd noise in the room and you wake up instantly, what's happened is you've got this cortisol spike in your brain, which sets you up into fight or flight. It makes you real aware. So you went from being really sleepy to being hyper aware in a matter of an instant or two. Same thing happens in fish. When things happen around them that scare them, noises, prop, emotion, other predators in the area, they start to get these cortisol spikes. So as the cortisol increases in their nervous system, they become more and more wary. They notice things more, like, look, there's a little bit of light in front of that fish I want to eat. I don't know what that light is, so I'm not going to eat it. So that's kind of what goes on as the fish are under pressure. As the pressure eases, the cortisol levels drop and they become less wary, so they're more likely to bite something that's not quite normal to them. As those cortisol levels are way up, those fish are super wary. They're seeing everything that they normally don't see or they normally don't respond to. So that's what happens. You start shaking that tree and stomping around in your boat, and those noise raises the cortisol levels in the fish around you, and they become more aware of what's going on around them. That's a survival mechanism.
That's why it takes about 15, 20 minutes for the fish cortisol to drop,
yep, and they come back to normal again.
So you get that spike, and they're like, oh, my God, oh, my God.
Yeah, what's this, what's that, I see this, I see that, and then it's back to, oh, man, I'm hungry.
Yeah, then you got to give it 15, 20 minutes for that to go away. Awesome.
I like that.
Yeah, this is like several weeks you've come up with all this impressive stuff.
Yeah, it's because I've been drinking more.
Okay.
And enjoying it more.
Yeah, okay. All right.
That's pretty impressive.
Got, 3 minutes left?
Five? Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, you got 5 minutes left.
5 minutes left. Okay. All right. Robert, where's best bet for redfish right now?
I'm hearing really good reports from all through Pine Island Sound, along all the islands, and all the way up into Bull Turtle Bay. I got actually my first report for Lemon Bay the other day. The guy said that around the Stump Pass area, he's been catching a few redfish and a few more snook, but he's still not super happy with how productive it is. But the couple redfish that he caught were in the high 20s with one like 29 and a half, almost 30 inches. So getting some still really, really good reports on them, you know, and they're all feeding on shrimp, pinfish, and cut bait. The white bait disappeared last week with that little cold front, so a lot of people are kind of in panic mode. And the few guys that are finding white bait, they're going out and catching a whole bunch of little tiny, tiny snook and being impressed by that.
All right. Tarpon. Right now, we started hearing tarpon stories about a week ago. Hard to put my finger on what's going on. So, Robert, time for that thumb on the thing. Where are the tarpon?
Well, they showed up in unbelievable numbers off of Knapp's Point, which is just the south end of Sanibel off the beaches. They've been in Captiva Pass. They've been really heavy in Boca Grande Pass. And then the whole intercoastal, I was talking to my buddy, actually just sent me a couple pictures. He's 3 for 9, I think he said, and he's down there by St. James City fishing on the intercoastal this morning so far. And then you've got Lunatic Carl's out there right now with friends, and he's 4 for 8, I think he sent me earlier, and he's fishing inside the harbor.
Now explain 4 for 8.
He's got 4 fish to the boat with 8 fish hooked total.
So you know, he jumped 8 fish, but he's lost 4, landed 4.
Correct. Okay. And when I went with him on Sunday, we went 0 lands for 3 fish in the air. You know, okay. And there's been some fish all over the place. But I will say the fish that are inside the harbor the last 3 days have all, by mid to late afternoon, been working their way back down towards the pass and going offshore or just off the beaches. And then the next morning, the last 3 mornings, they've popped back up in the harbor because Carl's been able to find them, and so have a couple of our other regular customers. And they're big fish. The one fish I put in the air, Carl and the girlfriend both guessed it, Christina guessed it to be over 200 pounds. The next one that Carl hooked, 190 to 200, he guessed.
Wow.
I mean, they're big, big fish. And a couple other customers I saw pictures of, 1.5, 160. Saw one that a customer posted on Facebook.
Are your eyes getting worse?
The fish that I hooked, it was 150 yards away. I couldn't tell how big it was. It just, at first I thought it was, or Carl and I both thought it was either a shark or a ray. When it hit, because it just started screaming line but stayed down. Then when it decided to launch, I was like, oh, it's a tarpon, and then threw the bait.
Okay. Now, 200 pounds is pretty much the upper limit here in this area, isn't it? We're seeing bigger than
that. Yeah, 2 to 220.
Yeah, I was going to say. About
I think world record's 220 something.
No.
What is it?
The world record?
Yeah.
285 or 286.
Okay, but you can do 220 here, but I don't know if I've ever seen anything over 220. Here.
No. Most people go there. That's basically the equivalent of a 15-pound bass.
Mm, yeah.
You go two, three lifetimes to get to that fish.
Yeah. I've been there with I've done over 200 a couple of times, but neither one was easy. I don't want to do it again. I did it. I'm happy with that. Lots of mackerel out there for you edible eaters. And there's the music. Wings, we have to go. I got to go back and face the world. I get up in the morning. I feel great. I put my clothes on. I'm going to work. I get sick to my stomach. I get nervous. This stuff is stressful. But that's why we're here. That's why the store's there. That's Robert over there. He's not stressful. And that's RJ over there.
And he don't care.
I'm fishing Frank here. I'm just going to be here. I'm still here, boys and girls. See you next week. Bye.
I'm going fishing. Hook, sinker, and line.